As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hi, I'm Johannes.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And hi, I am Julius.
And you're in the Ozone.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded woman, Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. And last but not least, over yonder, the man making the magic happen, Super Producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Make sure you subscribe. Podcast listeners, do your boys a favor, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Got some big news, gentlemen. We are sold out in Indianapolis over All-Star Weekend, Friday night. Tickets are gone. I heard they're selling on the black market. Thousands to get in the door to see us. So thank you to everybody that has bought a ticket for Friday night. I guess it's 2 weeks this Friday in Indianapolis. Very excited. But hey, if you can't make the show, get some merch. We got some indie-inspired merch up at nodunks.com. Go to breakingtee.com. You got shirts. You got this very slick crew neck printing on both sides. No big deal. And we got shorts as well. So go hoop in those. Those are a hot item. And yeah, this is a limited edition run, so don't take your time in getting that gear. We are going to talk about us calling the G League game last night here in College Park in the Atlanta area a little bit later. But we had a lot of games on, so let's get to drafting them. Let's do two rounds, picking your favorite game, biggest moments, whatever you want to touch on from last night in the association. TK, you won the number one pick, so congratulations to you. I'd like to hand you a jersey and an oversized hat and shake your hand. And
okay, great. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Take a photo. What game are you taking with the number one pick from last night?
Was this the best game of the night? I don't know. But it's a potential finals preview. The Denver Nuggets taking down Doc Rivers' Milwaukee Bucks. First game for Doc.
Yep.
Yeah, they lost. They lost. Who cares? Weirdly enough, for me, the biggest takeaway in this game, the Denver Nuggets defense. Sure, Nikola Jokic had a triple-double in three quarters. Sure, Jamal Murray went for 35 points and made the craziest shots you'll ever see. But the defense in the second half from Denver is really what won them the game. They held Milwaukee to 39% from the field, forced 10 turnovers. Peyton Watson was playing big minutes on Giannis Antetokounmpo. And I thought Jokic was looking like a defensive player of the year out there in the second half, deflecting passes in the pick and roll, helping on defense, grabbing boards and pushing it the other way. He was phenomenal. And he was also very good on offense as well. And it kind of came down to the defense for Denver. And the Jokic-Murray two-man game was a lot better than the Dame-Giannis two-man game. Not a great game for Dame in this one. He finished with 18 points, on 5 of 13 shooting. Doc Rivers post-game said, we didn't lose this game defensively. And I think that's kind of true. They did a decent enough job. They forced Jokic to take 25 shots, which is a good number if he's only getting 25 points. He was playing a lot of one-on-one. They basically limited everybody else, but they could not stop Jamal Murray. It was just on the other side. Offensively, they couldn't get great shots, I didn't think. We didn't see a ton of the Dame Giannis pick and roll. Doc even said pregame, you're probably not going to see a lot of that because they would have rather attacked Jokic. It just didn't work for him last night, but probably the smarter move because you saw late in the game, they finally did go to the Dame Giannis pick and roll at left. Dame matched up with Aaron Gordon. He tries to take him to the hoop, and Gordon just packs him off the backboard. Yep. They called him Snuffleupagus for the way he snuffed out that shot at the rim. So smart of Doc, I thought, to actually be picking on Jokic rather than Peyton Watson or KCP or Aaron Gordon. Great defenders for the Nuggets, but Jokic stepped up his game. You could tell this meant something to the Nuggets. They've played awesome in their biggest games, the Bucks, the Celtics. They really ramped the defense up, and they look good.
Yeah, they did look different. The defense was different. Giannis said, we set a different standard tonight. Strictly on the defensive end, Doc said, the offense was the problem. We just weren't moving it around enough. He was going down the bench and asking the assistant coaches that were there before he got there and said, what do we run here? He said that after the game. Like, what are we supposed to be running offensively? Because they did get into a little two-man game, especially with Chris Middleton at the end there, who fell over looking like me falling over at the College Park Skyhawks game yesterday. He was literally trying to run a pick and roll, and he fell over.
Yep.
So it came down to the wire. You're right. It could be a finals preview. Two teams playing pretty damn good. I thought the most interesting part was Giannis Antetokounmpo and what's been happening to him the last couple games. Giannis Antetokounmpo got called for a 10-second violation at the free throw line. That was unbelievable because he's doing something even different than when he used to get timed during the playoffs. He gets the ball, and he just puts it on his hip. He's not even playing with his hands. Nope. He just puts it on his hip for a good 3-4 seconds. The Nuggets broadcast, Katie Wingy, she pulled out the stopwatch.
Yeah.
Everybody was counting it, and it was right. It was over 10. The crowd was counting it. It's back, baby. That's what used to happen in the playoffs. It is back because he's taking long because it happened the previous game. He used to just flick it around, but now he's just chilling. Even Jokic asked for it.
Yeah. it's weird because you're right. This was a thing he used to do, and then he sped it up because everyone was like, why are you taking so long there? It's actually probably a disadvantage. Like, just find a quick rhythm and let it go. And then he did that for a while, and it seemed to be working. But yeah, he's back to this like whole meditation thing at the line, and everybody's counting it. There was other clips I remember over the weekend, somebody standing there like literally going like this. I forget, was it Max Strus? It was like somebody was like counting down there, and getting dinged with it at the end.
Max Strus, max time, baby.
Yeah,
you broke it.
The stopwatch was crazy to me. They like had a camera just on the broadcast table holding an iPhone up to the camera just to make sure that Scott Hastings wasn't counting his 1,000s or his Mississippis too fast. Like, I feel like you're hurrying through him, but he was pretty accurate. It was always about 12 Mississippis and 12 seconds as well. No reason to do that. You're just potentially costing yourself a point. So instead of holding the ball for a second, get into the dribble right away and shoot him.
Yeah. I know they want to get into whatever they always do in whatever format they shoot their free throws, so obviously in practice, but at a certain point, it's insane that somebody hasn't said, you've got to speed this up, because this, like, look, I know we're having a laugh about it and they got the stopwatch out, this could cost you a point, a game in a playoff setting, because you're correctly called for having the ball too long, going back to the old Karl Malone days where he's got it at the line forever. And it's just strange that he had gone away from it. That's the part I can't understand. Like, why did it come back in his
slow
life?
Slow it down again. Yeah. Big pop from the crowd, though. Big momentum moment for the Nuggets. They'll finally get that call.
It was wild at the end with Giannis at the free throw line. He missed one free throw, and Brook Lopez, huge offensive rebound, and Giannis just went out to the three-point line, banged home a three, so it was actually plus two there. But a couple key turnovers by Chris Middleton. This is a one-point game. 3-4 minutes left. Middleton, a couple turnovers, and then a missed three, and that's where it went. It was just in Denver against the champs. It's fine. I know people are saying, well, they shouldn't have hired Buck or Doc. I shouldn't have hired him. Look at them lose. This was a really, really close game, and they did have a different attitude on the defensive end. They're playing for Doc, and that's what he's hired for, that's for sure.
One of my favorite bits going around on Twitter right now from Nuggets fans is how Jamal Murray plays against your team determines whether or not your team is actually good. So I saw a tweet from at Mile High Adi. If Jamal Murray doesn't give your team at least 35, just step aside. This ain't your year. Because this is Jamal Murray. As he steps up in these big games against these good teams, he's only had 3 games of 35-plus points this year. 35 against the Celtics 10 days ago. That's a championship contender, of course, that they saw in the finals. 35 last night versus the Bucks, like you guys said, a potential finals matchup. And then we have to just pretend this one didn't happen. He had 37 against the Pistons early in January. And maybe it's all going to come together for Detroit and they're going to make a late run here. But I do love this idea that if Jamal Murray plays good against your team and goes for 30-plus, that's an honor to your squad. That means you're considered one of the better teams in the league. I love that they're running with this. But he was great. I mean, he was 35, 5 assists, 13 of 22, 9 of 10 at the line. He does raise his game against these better teams and obviously in the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe he was just trying to time it because the All-Star reserves get announced on Thursday. He's never made one before. I wonder when the coaches finally get it in. Are they getting it in right now? Because not only is he playing better with the numbers, but also Denver getting very close to the number one seed in the Western Conference. Only a half game back.
Yeah, when do they have to finalize their ballots? Right. Is it today, tomorrow? I mean, we find out on Thursday on TNT in the pregame, so it's got to be soon.
Got to mail him in.
He's trying to time this correctly to get some votes there from the coaches. Okay, let's go to you with the next pick. What do you have, Tess?
Well, the Clippers, who were hot, go into Cleveland and lose. The Los Angeles Clippers are a great team. And I just wonder what this Cleveland Cavaliers team is. What is this team that's won now 10 of 11? Really, it's simple stuff. It's defense and ball movement. We all know that. This was a close game. But at some point, their team is going to score a lot of points. This team is just so deep. And I'm not even going to talk about Mitchell and Allen and the return Mobley to start. Isaac Okoro had 17 first-half points. That was monstrous. He had 0 second half points. It doesn't matter. Then Caris LeVert at the end of the third quarter. Some real fun transition plays. A 2 layup and then a 3 right at the buzzer. So I mentioned those guys because there were 7 guys in double digits. And I just wonder about their offense and what it's going to become because we know it's Mitchell and 3-point shooters so far with Mobley and LeVert out. But they have the second best defense in the league, and they slowed down, besides Kawhi, who had a good game because he's Kawhi. Paul George only had 13, and James Harden only had 11 because they're all over them. Mm-hmm. And obviously Mitchell does his thing, setting up everybody. This is a different team with Mitchell running the show. And Caris LeVert should join him soon. 28 points and 12 assists for him, and Jared Allen, the best big on the floor by far, 20 points and 17 rebounds. Mobley only played 20 minutes in the starting lineup, and they actually lost his minutes, but he looked good in that he was just taking it to the rack. Like for a guy who was injured with a knee surgery, he scored on a great alley-oop and took it in, and Garland will be back soon. But it is so interesting because the bench developed because they got to play a lot. Mm-hmm. And I mean LeVert and Niang and Wade now. Dean Wade moved to the bench and Sam Merrill. So this team is just deep. It's kind of a team that many people still won't talk about. Because they'll look at the schedule, and understandably, who do they beat? Well, now it's the Clippers, and they got one against the Bucks. So things are obviously bright. They are, everybody's moving up to go catch those 76ers at the 3 spot. The Knicks winning last night, and obviously these Cavs.
But then Garland, comes back. I'd always hate to be in a position like Darius Garland, who's obviously a great player, has been an all-star. But it'd be weird, right, that you're out and your team suddenly, gets it all going and figures it out and has this, win streak and then they lost one, but they've got this great run here. And then it's like, you got to come back and you don't want to rock the boat and you don't want to be the scapegoat. But it's, silly, too, because you obviously you're a better team if he's there. It's just, on everyone to make it work just with him in the lineup. So he should be back soon, it's looking like here.
The liquid diet is over. Because he had a liquid diet because he broke his jaw. But he'll be back soon before the trade deadline, I suppose. It's happening very soon.
The key will be continuing to play the same way because that was what was impressive last night is that the Cavs played the same way they have.
Yep.
When Mobley wasn't there, Mobley was back. He started, but they didn't play a lot of Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley together. Only 9 minutes together, the first 4.5 minutes of each half. And then it was stagger mode, which is good for Mobley because he was able to attack the rim. And most importantly, the Cavs still got up 43 point attempts. Yep, yep. They got to just keep shooting threes. That's the thing that Garland is going to have to do when he catches the ball. Don't go into your dribble package, try and set things up. Just shoot it. Sam Merrill style. Isaac Okoro style. See, that's the thing. I'll take Garland over the end of the rotation guys for the Cavs, but he's got to kind of play their style, and they played their style last night.
Yep. Yep. Good call. All right, I got the next pick here. Give me Ben Simmons with the near triple-double in his return as the Nets crushed the Utah Jazz last night. Big, dominant victory. But Ben Simmons is back, guys. There's life on Ben Simmons Island. I felt like Wally this morning, finding the plant in the fridge and putting it in the boot. There's a little life on the island because he returns from a three-month absence. He looked great. 10 points, 11 assists, 8 boards. He probably would have had a triple-double if he wasn't on the minutes restriction. He did all of this in like 18 minutes off the bench. And you saw the difference. The guy can rebound and push the ball. He's a one-man fast break, and if you've got shooters out there, and it was contagious on this night where everybody was hitting him for Brooklyn, it's a difference maker. I love there was one play about 3 minutes to go in the first quarter. Ben Simmons in traffic, out-rebounds two of the big Jazz guys in there, and then obviously just goes right away, pushes it immediately on the break, and finds Lonnie Walker for an easy corner three, and you saw this multiple times. This stat blew my mind. The Nets had 13 transition points in the first quarter. That exceeded their total average of 12 transition points over the last 22 games, in which they went 5-17. So Ben back, at least for this game. It was fun to see him out there. It was like actually a feel-good moment for a very weird Brooklyn Nets season that's completely fallen apart, if we're being honest, over this last 20-game stretch or so. And he was great. So come on over to the island. Grab yourself a cheap boat ticket and come see me. Because it's only going to last probably for a couple of days or so. But anyway, Ben Simmons back. I want to show him some love. He did look good.
He's faster than Walker Kessler, I think.
Yes, that's right.
He said, I'm a fast break every time I touch the ball. Okay, play 10 straight games, and then we can revisit it.
I know. But wow, this one got out of hand for Utah, as everybody on Brooklyn. I mean, Bridges had a great game. And you had guys like Lonnie Walker, I said, and Spencer Dinwiddie even getting in on the action. Everybody, Cam Thomas, like everybody scoring and hitting threes.
I was just surprised to hear the Ben Simmons news, because usually when it comes to Ben Simmons and injuries, we and the media, everybody talks about it. Oh, he may be back in 6 days. And Jacques Vaughn was even talking about it. You know, when he was injured, he thought, oh, he's going to be back soon. So I was just a little surprised to see Ben Simmons back in the near triple-double off the bench. And also surprised to see the Brooklyn Nets put up 147 points, by far their season high. You know, 50 boards, 41 assists, and 21 threes and 12 steals. Those are good numbers. And Ben Simmons, when he plays, was good this season.
That's right. He hadn't played since, like, what, November 6th or something like that. That's when we were talking about Ben Simmons Island. And I was there, and I was on board. And, then he was injured. And this back has been it's really prevented him from playing over the last couple of years, this pinched nerve and all that. But it was good to see him back last night. We'll see if he can play for, like you said, a couple weeks even would be incredible at this point, because he's back and then he's gone.
He's played 10 or more games once.
That's nuts.
Since 2010. Or since 2021, in a row. It's also funny that he came back wearing those jerseys.
Yeah.
Like, of everything, the cause jerseys. It's like he was wearing insane fits for the entirety of the time that he was sitting on the bench for the Nets. He's like, I'm coming back and we're wearing these.
Make sure that lines up. Maybe he waited.
Yeah, with a bad back. Those look heavy. Or hockey jerseys. He used to wear those. He stopped wearing those now. Maybe they're too heavy for those back impingements.
Let's do another round. Drafting last night's games. TK, what do you got?
A classic tale of two halves in Dallas. Not a lot of compete in the first half, I thought, from the Mavericks. It was dead in the arena. Orlando, not a great scoring team. They scored 77 points in the first half, shot 65%, and had a 16-point lead at halftime. If it wasn't for Jaden Hardy scoring 18 of his 20 in the first half, the Mavs maybe get blown out in this one, but Hardy really kept them attached. And then in the third quarter, the Mavericks started getting stops, much harder shots for Orlando in the second half, and they caught fire. The lead was gone in 10 minutes, just like that. Tim Hardaway Jr. could not miss. He made 5 threes in the second half. He even banked one in from the left wing, and I almost think he meant it.
Wow.
I mean, he smiled afterwards like he meant to do it, but it looks so smooth. But you don't see a guy go for the bank from the corner. Also, Doncic and Hardaway, 54 of 70 in the second half for Dallas. It was either Doncic scoring or finding Tim Hardaway, who had absolutely zero conscience in the second half. Meanwhile, defensively, Dallas held Orlando to 38% in the second half shooting, and it just got a lot tougher for the Magic. The third quarter was really where the game was won, but it came down to the end. Doncic had a near dagger. I call it the I see everything assist. All five Magic, looking at Doncic because he's been dominating the second half of this game, finds Derek Lively just hanging out behind the rim for an easy alley-oop, and then just starts pointing, looking around, pointing his eyes. I see it. Yeah, I know you're guarding me, but there's a guy wide open right there. That was nice. But then Tim Hardaway Jr. had a wild turnover where he ended up getting called for a travel, and then you could see Luka and Tim Hardaway Jr. yelling at Jason Kidd, call a timeout.
Right.
They had a timeout left. It would have been a good time for Jason Kidd to stand up and say something, but a turnover. The Magic started hitting shots. Paolo Banchero goes to the line. A great missed free throw. He just rocketed it off the front rim. They had a lot of time. He finds Franz Wagner for a deep, deep three. He missed. And a solid win for the Mavericks, though it was dramatic at the end.
Yeah, 131-129. Thoughts on that one at all?
The Magic shutting themselves down a little bit in that third quarter. They only scored 12 points. That was obviously monstrous for them. But these, the stats, the numbers, if you're into basketball geekery like I am, the Dallas Mavericks only shot 69 times from the floor yesterday. That's not a big number. That's because they you know, shot so many free throws. That's a huge part of it. But yeah, the Magic, they shot well. You know, they shot over 50%, 47% from three, and they shot that ball a hell of a lot more than the Mavs did. So it was a weird game. And this Mavs team is so interesting to watch because it's interesting to see what they're going to do with 1 week here. It's 1 week until the trade deadline to see if they try and juice it up a little bit. But it always stinks for them because it's always like one of their stars seems out and Kyrie out in this one.
And I just love where we're at with the scoring in today's game that, I don't know, guy gets 45, 15, and 9. Mm-hmm. It's the fourth game we draft. It's not that big a deal. I'm not even sure you brought it up, and I don't blame you because it's like the scoring, you know, explosion that we've seen. It's feels common at this point for a guy to get 45. As weird as that sounds, that the bar just keeps getting raised, and you can only freak out now for maybe 60-point games, and even then we go, give me 70.
It's kind of true because I saw like the highlight packages when I was looking at YouTube, and I was like, they're putting this up near triple-double? Who cares?
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. It's insane, but a great game.
I did see a weird statistical thing happen in this game. Derek Lively got absolutely jacked in the face by Wendell Carter Jr. at one point, and I think he got fouled on the shot as well. So he got to take four free throws to make three.
Rare.
That's pretty rare. Yep. That was cool. Mm. 1-2-for-4. So technically 2-for-3, which is what he would have got if he just finished the dunk. But he's got a bloody nose, and I'm sure he's going to have black eyes because of it. Man, he got whacked in the face.
Yes, I saw that as well. All right, Tass, what do you got here for fifth overall from drafting last night's games?
Well, the Timberwolves and Oklahoma City Thunder, they played recently, and I wanted to see the rematch because they were 1-2 in the West going in, but now the Wolves have sprung up to first in the West. The Nuggets are second, and OKC is third because they did get revenge here on OKC after they took them down last week. Again, no Conley in this one, so the big Timberwolves worry was them turning it over throughout the game and late in the game because the last two times they played OKC, they turned it over 21 times. And this one, only 13, I thought. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who took Conley's spot, and Anthony Edwards didn't try to do too much at the end of the game. They got into their sets. They moved it around. And that's the opposite of how they've looked recently. They just give it away so much. That is one of the worst things that they do in the game. But you also just see how great their defense is. They really held OKC to 99 points in this one. The last 2 points don't really count. So under 100 is something huge because Rudy Gobert got the best of Chet Holmgren. He was all up in him the whole game, and Chet only hit two shots. He did some good things, you know, blocking shots and all that, but only 4 points in this one. So it came down to the wire where I thought Minnesota was just really smart in the way they were just going through their sets and not trying to do too much. And Anthony Edwards didn't get a foul call that he really, really, really wanted. He had a hand on his forearm as he tried to go up and dunk it, and Shea called it. Or I'm sorry, Shea fouled him. There is no doubt. So he got down, and after the final buzzer when the game was over, he said, quote, cheating ass referees. He was just so mad about it. And I understand SGA more free throws than the entire Wolves team. That's totally true. 16-15, and the Wolves do complain about this quite a lot because they don't get enough calls. And so they're sort of upset about that. And Chris Finch is going to say that more and more and more to the bench and to the front office and say, our guys are stars. Let's get them some free throws. Mm-hmm. But this was just a fun game. It was single digits basically the entire game. There's only 17 seconds where the Wolves were up 10 points. So this was fun. It was understandable that Minnesota won after losing to OKC and after probably looking at this game while they were playing Wemby, and Wemby did the Sham God in their last game. They lost to the Spurs. But hopefully Jalen Williams is back because he also got injured at the end of the game.
Yes. Yes, he did. I guess we're waiting to find out how severe that is. That would be a huge blow to the Thunder moving forward. But great game, like you said, between these top teams here in the Western Conference. What was it? 24 lead changes, 6 ties. And, Anthony Edwards saying, give me the fine, I don't care. We got the win, but I got some things to say about the officials in this one. What a take by him at the end, like down the middle of the lane to dunk it. That sort of, I guess that put them up 4, if I have that correct there, to expand the lead a little bit. But I would love a series between these two teams. Like these are like your up-and-coming teams, it feels like, over the last couple seasons here, or at least with the Thunder, hopefully going to be in the playoffs for the first time, really in the playoffs. Just be a great series. I feel like it would go along with these squads. But, yeah, any takeaways from this one?
Anthony Edwards was right. He got fouled quite a few times. I thought this was a pretty physical game, all considered. But like you said, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander took more free throws than the entire Timberwolves team. I think Edwards ended up taking 4. I thought he could have taken about 10, something like that. Mm-hmm. There was definitely a bunch of drives where he was getting hit on the wrist, having the exact same reaction that he did on the dunk. But the good thing for the Timberwolves is, despite feeling like the refs were against them, they kept their heads, even without Mike Conley. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Good win from Minnesota. All right, final game here in our draft. I mean, there's lots still to pick from on the board. You had the Knicks winning without Julius Randle. I know they took on the Hornets. You had the Celtics picking up a win against the Pelicans. You had the Rockets taking care of business against the Lakers. We'll get into that game a little bit later. The Kings beat the Grizzlies. The Wizards in the Nut Dust Bowl standings got a big one for me, beating the Spurs. Who else? You had the Blazers beating the Sixers. No Embiid again, as he's starting to run out of games when it comes to hitting the threshold for all these awards. But give me Eric Gordon scoring 23 off the bench as the Suns add to Miami's woes with the 118-105 win. Two teams sort of going in opposite directions right now. Again, Eric Gordon, great. Booker added 22. Everybody contributing a little bit for the Suns last night. But they handed the Heat their 7th consecutive loss. This is the Miami Heat's first 7-game losing streak since a 7-game slide in the 07-08 season. That's the season before Spoelstra took over for Pat Riley. That's how far we got to go back to find a 7-game slide from the Miami Heat. That's the season in which they traded Shaq to the Suns. That's the season in which they went 15-67 and end up with the number 2 pick and Beasley, super cool Bees. So you got to go way back, and it's sort of perplexing here because they have their guys. I mean, they have their 3 guys, but it's not working when Bam, Tyler Hero, and Jimmy are playing together. They're 5-11 in the 16 games with those 3 in the lineup. It's strange, and people are wondering, what's the switch up here? Does Tyler Hero have to go to the bench? Does Spoelstra really got to make a big move here when it comes to the starting lineup? I know they've had a lot of them, but Jimmy was fine in this game. Bam did nothing. Tyler took a ton of shots and couldn't really contribute all that much. He had 17 points in the end, but 18 shots, not great. And it was pretty pathetic performance here. This was like the score looks even a little closer than it sort of was. It was not even close to a game, and that's sort of what's been going on with Miami over this 7-game slide. A lot of these double-digit blowouts, Tess.
Yeah, I don't have the answer for this one, but this one was really a blowout that became a 13-point loss because
the
Heat were able to recover. Yeah, that was a makeshift comeback. It didn't feel right, but the Jimmy minutes were beat pretty hard. He was a minus 17 in this game, and Terry Rozier did have his best offensive game, but obviously his minutes did not go all that well either. So he's in the starting lineup. Yeah, they brought him in because their offense was struggling.
Right.
So what happened here?
It's continuing to struggle.
It's struggling.
During the 7-game skid, Miami's had the worst offensive rating and the 3rd worst defensive rating. That's the eye-opening stat. It's bad on both sides during this run. And last night, they started Rozier, Hero, Butler, Highsmith, and Bam for the second consecutive game, and it didn't work out. So, yeah, you're left going, what do they do? Is it Spo? Should he put Hero to the bench and let him run the second unit? Do you see something else, Trey? Like, what is it here with what's going on in Miami? Because this is something we haven't seen in like 15 years, like a streak this bad.
I guess the good thing is that Jaime Jaquez Jr. is back. He's a good connector, so I think he'll probably end up going back in the starting lineup for Haywood Highsmith. I would rather go with both Hero and Rozier starting, just because I think the Heat need offense. The defense has been bad, I agree, and it's going to be bad if you're playing two Tyler Heroes, which is basically what they got. But they're scoring 104 points per game in the month of January. That's got to be the lowest for a month in a long, long time in the NBA these days. I mean, the worst teams in the league are scoring 108 points a game, yeah. You know? So they need offense, and down the line, they're going to need to figure out ways to have efficient offense come playoff time, because we've seen their offenses dry up in the past. So I assume they'll get their defense back, just because that's how the Heat usually do. I counted them out completely at this time last year when they had basically the exact same record. Yeah. But it feels worse right now.
Yeah, yeah.
The losing streak and the offense just getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, Jaime Jaquez definitely has to get into the starting lineup, not only because of the offense and being a connector. That makes sense. That's what the Heat are. They're a connecting team. But also defensively, just scrapping it up. So he takes Highsmith's spot. Yeah, the backcourt is the interesting part, because you have two bad defensive players there in Hero and Rozier, who just struggle together. So they just need one doggy with one of those guys, potentially, if things aren't going well. So I still can see Terry Rozier coming off the bench, and you throw a Josh Richardson beside Tyler Hero, because he will play defense and he won't have to shoot it every single time, because Terry and Tyler are so similar. They love shooting it every single time. They shot it a lot. They're the two highest shot takers in this game, field goal attempts in this game.
And they were getting on Rozier to be more aggressive with his shot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he comes to the new team, you're trying to find your role, you don't want to, like, shoot all the time like you were doing in Charlotte, where it didn't really matter. And he was playing well, don't get me wrong. We liked the trade, and it made sense. They needed this, like, little boost of offense. But they were getting on him. You could see, like, from quotes, like, you gotta get into scary Terry mode here, man. That's why we traded for you. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, when you got Tyler doing that, is it a bit of an overlap?
Yeah.
Should the ball be in Jimmy's hands more? You get into all this stuff.
I get it. Hey, Terry, our offense sucks. Please shoot. I get that. But that's why I think you'd be perfect as a sixth man, because he can just shoot every single time with that bench. But it's a weird scenario, because Kyle Lowry was yanked from the starting lineup because they were looking for something better. And now they thought they got it in a trade. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet.
Looking for a win there. First win with Terry Rozier in the lineup and trying to snap this streak. So seven straight. Again, it's been 15 years since they've lost that many in a row. All right, those are the games we drafted from last night. Left a lot on the table. You tell us your thoughts on the games we missed in the comments. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll hit the beach.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I gotta get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch! We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/nodunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/nodunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
Okay, here in the Classic Factory, few things. First off, Darius Garland is expected to return on Wednesday. Shams just tweeted this during the show. He's been out since December 14th with that fractured jaw. So Cleveland, in theory, becomes whole this week on Wednesday night with now everybody back and all of their pieces. Going back to the Heat game, I forgot to mention the wedgie because we had one last night. Yes, that's right. Terry Rozier. Okay, that makes up for everything. You know what? All that stuff I said about the seven-game slide and who needs to get out of the starting lineup, maybe come off the bench. Dah, throw it out. That's a wedgie from the Miami Heat. It's Scary Terry himself there on the wing. 28 on the season. We needed that. Been a couple days since we had one, so good stuff.
Just a classic one right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Three-pointer from the wing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Let's hit the beach, baby.
You got the buds. I got the rockets. You got the nuts. I got the chocolates. We got that chit chat down pat. Blah, blah, blah. You got that certain special. Je ne sais quoi. Let's go to the beach, baby.
We are on the beach because it's the only place to read your emails and your tweets. And the first one is by way of Twitter/X. It's from @LennyMoe. I heard you guys on the College Park Skyhawks call while watching highlights of my boy Kobe Bufkin. Give us Hawks fans the truth. How did he look out there? You think his play can translate with the big squad? Hashtag, caca! Thank you there to @LennyMoe for setting us up nicely here to talk a little bit about us calling the game last night here in College Park between the Clippers and the Skyhawks. But you want to start with addressing the question? Kobe Bufkin, the real deal, 43 last night, career high for him.
Yeah, we saw him just dropping shot after shot after shot. Yeah, he's a real deal. Yeah, I think he can definitely help with the Hawks. He plays the exact same position as Trae Young, so that's very interesting. He handles the ball every single possession. Mm-hmm. But they had just beat this Ontario Clippers team that they're playing, and Ontario wanted to change that from the get-go. They were getting physical with Kobe Bufkin immediately, and that's what's so impressive is that he was like, okay, I like this. And maybe it's just being courtside, but it felt like they allow a lot more contact in the G League because they were Xavier Moon, nephew of Jamario Moon, was guarding him and was right up in his shorts, getting physical with him. They started jaw-jacking a little bit, started yapping a little bit, but Kobe kept coming. And so, yes, it was impressive. He's got the handles. He's shooting three-point shots, no problem. It wasn't even taking time. It wasn't off a pass. He was just walking right into it. So 43, he airballed the last one to try and tie it. He was pissed. He was very angry. He went and ate up that stanchion. He was so mad. But yeah, he looks the real deal. And he did it in front of Trey, who was happened to be courtside. So it's interesting. It's very interesting what the Hawks do because they're the exact same position. I don't think they're going to play a lot together day.
Right.
But as a number 15 pick, he was drafted for a reason. This guy can shoot.
Sure. Well, your thoughts on Kobe, and we can get into even just calling the game last night and doing that down at the arena?
More like Kobe buckets.
That's, nice.
Yeah, the problem is that the three best players on the Hawks all play his position. So why did they draft him? That's a good question. They drafted AJ Griffin the year prior. He can't get on the court right now. There is a log jam in the backcourt for Atlanta, but he was bucket central last night. What is this, Bucket City? It was fun to watch. He was scoring inside. He was scoring in mid-range. He was hitting the three. Skeets, we were sitting at the scorer's table. He looked right at us on one three-point attempt.
Oh, yeah.
Shot it, stared at us, ball drops in for three. We go crazy. Whoa, this is awesome. Then he did it again at the end of the third quarter, and it rattled up.
Oh.
It did go boom.
I know. Yeah, he was doing the Steph Curry, or we've seen even Trey do it before.
Yeah.
They take the shot, turn around before it even goes in. But I mean, he was in the zone. Unfortunately, down the stretch, obviously that air ball hurt. He had another one, like he had a little floater that he couldn't connect on. So, you know, they locked in on him. He was their offense for a majority of the game. But very impressed with, first, his handles is tight because you're right. They guys were draped all over him and he's playing through it. And I also love his sort of demeanor. I never saw him once sort of like complaining about it or looking for, the whistle and trying to whine about it. Not at all. Like he was like, okay, you want to play physical? Let's play. So he was very impressive. It was a great game. We got an entertaining game. But Moon, he was the one that came through in the clutch. He hit two threes. That one at the end of the shot clock.
Oh.
I mean, the Hawks played great defense. Skyhawks played great defense for 23 seconds. It found its way to Moon around half court, you know, near the logo at least, and he splashed it. And then he hit another one, and that sort of iced the game. But how did you think How would you grade our performance on the call, doing play-by-play and color and working the sidelines? What's the overall takeaway for our scorecard?
I'm giving us a T for true. That was truly fun to do all that. It's hard, man.
Oh, it's so tough.
Like, I've been having regrets for calls I could have made. Like, I wish I would have had chambered on that big, that deep Xavier Moon 3. He hit that one from coming. I went with Sea of Tranquility.
Yeah.
Which was fine. Yeah. I made a Fleetwood Mac reference for all the youngsters out there.
It really does. Great, calling a game, like, you just appreciate the professionals so much more. And just how difficult it is to, am I talking too much? Are we saying the same thing too much? Are we not focusing enough on the play-by-play and being too silly? Okay, are we getting Tass in here enough on the site? Like, it's a hell of a dance that you need to do reps for to only get better at. Yeah, no one's giving us an A, but I also don't think we were failing last night for people who have, you know, basically never done this outside of one summer league game where we were sitting there in polo shirts.
I think we were better than the summer league game.
Yeah, I think so too.
We were locked in. And Kobe Bufkin definitely made an impression on my kids. They went to the game last night. And then when I woke up this morning, Ada, my youngest, just kept saying, Kobe Bufkin.
He's got a great name.
Kobe Bufkin. Then we get in the car to take her to school. Isla was already there. So her car seat is open. She says, Kobe Bufkin's my invisible friend.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, he's young. Not grade school young, but fun times down in the south side.
He's young, but he is he's polished, because I got to interview him as he walked off at half, had an incredible first half. He dropped it, and it was 24 or 25. Yeah. And I asked him, you know, I wanted to get his vibe of the guy's being in his shorts, being draped all over him, and he's a professional. He didn't even bite. I just wanted him
to immediately talk about how we got to be better defensively.
Yeah,
he just pivoted right to that when you asked
Let's
him.
Talk offense.
He's like, you're killing it, and he's like, I don't care. We got to play defense, basically.
Yeah, he was awesome. Obviously, in the first half and the second half, career high 43 was pretty cool. And Moon shooting it up, literally. You said rafters. I thought he hit the rafters.
Yeah.
It was so high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks to the Skyhawks for having us out there, the No Dunks Takeover. We're going to be doing this again, which is exciting. I believe March 3rd versus the G League Ignite. That's going to be a day game. You know, there'll be more of a crowd on the weekend there. So we get another crack at it. So start you know, crafting your lines here now. And potential things you're going to say. We didn't get a wedgie. That was unfortunate.
No wedgie.
I mean, not really even a shot that was close to one, if I remember correctly. But we had a blast. Also, this was big for us in the, you know, TBJ starters, no dunks lore. We once again shot half-court shots. We finally hit one.
Skeets was on fire.
I was on fire.
Straight up on fire.
Okay, so just to set the scene, Summer League, when we were the starters, you guys, most of you know this, we would always shoot half-court shots. Now, we would do it during the game. They'd bring us out during a timeout, and we'd get out there and fire up some half-court shots and then run it back in the show later that night. And we did this for years, and we could never hit one. No one could hit one. At some point, someone counted, we were like,
it was bad.
I don't know, we were like 0 for 36 or something. It was insane.
There was four of us taking multiple shots every single year.
So, you know, frustrating, very frustrating. There's some close calls here and there, you know, hitting rim or bouncing out. But anyway, so we shot before the game last night down at the arena here in College Park. And, you know, the camera guy's getting ready. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll shoot this from half. I step up, first shot, bang. Goes in. I start celebrating. All right. I turn around and I go, you're recording that, right? He just shakes his head. I thought the guy was recording. I didn't see that. I should have checked the red light. It was my mistake. And so then I was terrified because.
Your mistake?
Well.
No.
The cameraman's mistake?
Of course. He should be rolling the second he walks
sure,
on.
Sure, sure, sure. Maybe he was focusing.
Don't blame
yourself
for his mistake. I mean, hey, I'm sure. Whatever.
Don't worry. I had a couple more left in me. Because we missed that one, but soon after I hit back-to-back half-court shots. So the streak is over. This is like The Undertaker losing at WrestleMania. It's officially over. We have footage of us hitting a half-court shot in an actual, you know, NBA Sayest Arena. So, whew.
That was impressive.
Good to get that off our back.
You made the first one, no camera. Would have been tough to make a second one. You made the second one, banked it in, and you said, I don't like to bank them in. Then you made the next one, the very next shot, didn't bank it in. I was only hoping you were going to say, I don't like to hit the rim. Completely switch it.
Yeah. It is when you bank it in, like, I'm not meaning to bank it in, so it feels a little cheap to me. So I was happy that I could step back up and knock it out. Any other thoughts, though, on the...
It was nice to run the three-man weave again. Not a lot of things to do with three guys on a basketball court, but everybody knows the three-man weave. But apparently, if you don't do it for 20 years, you're a little rusty.
Yeah.
A little rusty.
Oh, yeah. Man. Tass blew a tire at the end. A little tumble. Yeah. But yeah. We finished that one.
Yeah, I was making a lateral step, side to side. So, yeah. Yeah, why wear actual shoes on a basketball court? I don't know why I did that. But anyway.
What do you got, penny loafers over there? Like,
no, not quite penny loafers. It was in between a casual and a dress shoe.
Hybrid.
So, yeah, it was not, didn't have any lateral ability.
Nice.
But anyways, it was nice to hit the floor. I think we hit that that layup. So
We did.
Yep.
That was exciting.
And then I threw an alley-oop to Trey. Beautiful finish.
Yeah, dunked it for sure.
Exactly. Yeah, the camera guy wasn't rolling on that one. Trey didn't throw down a 360 windmill. We looked over. We said, "Were you rolling?" And he's like, "No."
Don't worry, geez. I can bank one in.
All right. So thanks again to the Skyhawks for having us. We're looking forward to that March 3rd game to give it another go. All right. Next cue here. Hey boys, I'm officially all slopped out when it comes to trade rumors involving Zach LaVine, DeJounte Murray, and even Alex Caruso. So what's another name, maybe lower down on the NBA trade board, that interests you with less than 10 days to go before the trade deadline? That's from Stan the man. Thank you for the cue. Tass, what do you think? Is there a name lower on the trade deadline board that we've either seen from Sam Vecenie or, you know, Hoops Hype or wherever that, you know, is a little intriguing name that you're like, okay, that player could be interesting on another squad.
I think we've talked about everybody, to be honest. It's going to be an interesting trade deadline because there aren't a lot of terrible teams. There are terrible teams, but there's only a handful. And so I keep on going back to Charlotte. They're going to want to move Gordon Hayward. They're going to want to move Kyle Lowry. PJ Washington is very interesting.
It's intriguing, yeah.
It is intriguing if somebody really wants it. But then I start looking at the Pistons. They are going to move Bojan Bogdanović 100%. That has to happen this season. Then I start thinking of Danilo Gallinari. Oh, yeah, that guy can shoot it. Somebody pick him up. I think the Celtics and Gordon Hayward just seem like... They seem like a match. It's meant to be. Gordon Hayward was just recently talking on a podcast about that him and the Kyrie relationship when they were with the Boston Celtics. They just were a little. Everybody was a little too selfish, looking out for themselves. He didn't say Kyrie did. He didn't say he did, but he said everybody was kind of looking out for themselves. So he's going to go back and make up for it with the bench. Because even this, I don't even know if the Celtics would want to do that. They have one of the top offenses, one of the top defenses. All they do is shoot threes. Last night in the game, they didn't shoot one mid-range shot. It's quite incredible when you look at it. It was all in the paint or all in the three-point line. So, Gordon, if you're ready for that, I think it would be a buyout more likely because he makes 31 mil and the Celtics don't have anything to trade for that. So, I don't know. I don't have any great ones because Gordon has been talked about plenty.
Do you have a name we haven't talked about when it comes to the slot?
Their names have been said.
Okay.
Their names have been said, but not often and not nearly as much as last trade deadline. Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal of the Brooklyn Nets. I think O'Neal is probably more gettable. He's got an expiring deal, $9.5 million, done at the end of this season. Meanwhile, Dorian Finney-Smith is signed through the end of next season, has a player option for 25-26. But they're both fair three-point shooters, 38 for Dorian Finney-Smith. And 36 for Royce O'Neal. I think O'Neal is probably a notch below Dorian Finney-Smith just in general, but probably takes a first-round pick to get DFS since he's got a little bit longer deal, a little bit better player. But you could probably get Royce O'Neal for like a decent second-round pick or a super late protected first-round pick, and maybe that's a helpful guy for a team like Milwaukee who needs some sort of wing stopper but don't have a lot to trade. Maybe that could be a target for them.
That's a good call.
Okay. Moving on here. This is fun. Dylan Brooks was back on his bullshit last night. This is what the email reads. Okay? Dylan Brooks was back on his bullshit last night, this time baiting Lakers forward Jared Vanderbilt into an ejection, and later picking up a flagrant one for popping LeBron in the face. This guy is a grade-A shit disturber. But I want to know, who else is on your NBA all-instigator team? That's from J-Dub. Yes, Dylan Brooks got Vanderbilt tossed there. Vanderbilt poked him in the back of the head after being frustrated. Now, this was the play prior, a couple plays prior. I mean, it was a pretty blatant push from Brooks into the back, and that's what everybody was upset about. But he does get under the skin, especially when it comes to the Lakers. I assume he is on your NBA all-instigator team. Dylan Brooks, a starting spot?
Absolutely. One of our forwards on the all-instigator team. That was an easy add, and yeah, definitely a dirty play. The push on the back on Vanderbilt. The one on hitting LeBron in the face seemed a more reasonable rough play.
Yeah.
But yeah, the push in the back, that's terrible.
Yeah. That's the number one. We hate that one.
Yeah.
A guy is just defenseless in the air, and so any sort of push, it doesn't even need to be a strong push. You know, you're putting a guy at jeopardy being
at that
near
speed and size. Yeah, it's bad stuff. Yeah. But yeah, he's on the team. Here's the rest of the team. The at guard, the captain of our team, Patrick Beverley. Mm. That one's an easy add to me. The other guard, I'm going with Jalen Suggs. Normally this would be Marcus Smart's position, I think. Yep. But he's out and hasn't had quite the same impact with the Grizzlies as he did with the Celtics. And I think Suggs is just generally sticky as a defender and loves to stick his tongue out at people. So instigator for me.
Okay.
At forward, Dylan Brooks obviously makes the list. And then my other forward, I'm going with Grant Williams.
Hmm. Okay.
It could be Draymond Green. It probably should be Draymond Green. But, you know, we've talked about his instigating a whole bunch. And Grant Williams, to me, is hilarious because he's always getting in the mix and it always goes bad for his team. Like, a lot of these guys, they start instigating to get their team fired up.
Yeah.
But with Grant Williams, I feel like it's the opposite. The other team gets fired up and it backfires. So that's why he made my list as a forward. Ooh. At center, a little tough. I'm going Yusuf Nurkic, though.
Okay.
Seems like a guy who always gets into a scruffle, and obviously he was mixed up with Draymond Green earlier this year.
Okay, so your NBA all-instigator team in the backcourt, Patrick Beverley, like you said, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
He's an all-timer. Then going out with Jalen Suggs, then you got Dylan Brooks, Grant Williams over Draymond Green, controversial choice, but I like it, and then Nurk as the center. Those are some instigators. Anyone he's missing on the list, coming off the bench even?
No, those are great ones. Patrick Beverley, I always thought maybe this is the Kyle Lowry time to take his spot in Philadelphia, but Philadelphia likes the pests, it feels like, and Patrick Beverley's good at that. The Dylan Brooks thing was hilarious in that we know the LeBron versus Dylan Brooks from the past, and LeBron was asked about it after the game. He was just asked, well, what happened out there? You know, what happened out there? Next question was a LeBron. Just didn't want, just too professional. Sorry, Dylan. Not even going to talk about you anymore. That was great.
Follow-up question. What did you think about his hat the other day?
Well, I would like to say something about his hat, actually.
Oh, his big noggin trapper hat? All right. Final question here. Good day, No Dunkies. Did you see that D'Angelo Russell was fined $15,000 for booting the game ball into the stands at the end of the Lakers-Warriors? How do we feel about this? Did the league get this one right, or should they let the boys kick? That's how I choose to read this email. Thanks, love the pod. That's from Tricky Nicky. So, yeah, we have the clip, I believe. D'Angelo Russell getting fined $15K. Right at the end of the game, Curry firing up the basically full court heave, and it's coming up well short, so D'Angelo Russell goes to kick it and sort of shanks it up into the crowd. And that, you know, cost him $15,000 because the league does not like you kicking the ball into the stands. How do we feel about
it? That was a happy kick. It wasn't hey, we just won this game and I'm kicking it. I can understand it if it's we lost, I'm just so pissed off, I'm kicking it into the stands. That's what I think fines are for. Mm. But when it's just a happy, elated kick, not good with it.
Okay.
Not good with it.
Trey?
A celebratory kick does feel different than an anger kick.
Yeah.
Was D'Angelo Russell coming off the bench for that?
I believe so, yeah.
He should be fine. That's pretty funny, man. $15,000, that's a low fine in the NBA. It's not the $25,000 that's like the big one when you celebrate with
Oh, sorry. I wasn't looking at
that one,
you
that
doing
was 25K,
the Sam Cassell
but a kick,
big ball dance.
A kick is worth 15K. That's fine. That's totally fine. We can't be kicking basketballs.
I agree. You should not be kicking a basketball.
It will be deformed.
That's right. You're going to ruin this. And also, the whole point here is like, you know, someone's getting ready with their kid to leave the arena, and I guess that ball could pop him in the head. It's a little dangerous because he just hoofed it by, like, even because, again, he shanked it, so it goes flying out to the baseline. Imagine he had actually made contact with it correctly.
Blast
it. Would have gone, yeah, flying up into the sort of the side court there. But all right, 15K, let's hear your thoughts. Should you be allowed to kick a basketball? And, and you know, maybe the NBA's done this to themselves, because I see the NBA always sharing clips online. Pascal Siakam, little juggling of the ball with his feet, little soccer skills. Mm. Many other guys. Curry himself. You know, all these guys like kicking around the ball before the game. We always show that. We're sending a bad message allowing them to do that, and then telling D'Angelo Russell he can't hoof it at the end of a double overtime game. That's my personal opinion on it.
So. You think if he pulls D'Angelo Russellino and then just catches it on his foot and starts juggling it, you think that's allowed?
Yeah, because it feels like the part that's getting the 15K is not actually kicking it. It's kicking it into the stands.
Into the stands, yeah.
Yeah. Like, if, yeah, you're right. If he had, yeah, nice brush.
Starts juggling.
Yeah, exactly.
Catches it on his neck.
They may have paid him an extra $15,000.
Got to try it next time.
That's right.
I thought I was going to get fined yesterday because I was sitting with Trae Young in the first row, and he had his young baby son on his lap, and then a play came right in front of us. There's a referee in front of us. There's people in front of us. I thought the ball was going to get popped right to his son,
and I
thought I was going to be in trouble.
Oh, because you're sort of distracting?
I was taking it all up. The kid was eating popcorn. He was enjoying popcorn, double fisting. But, yeah, I was taking – away all the attention. He could have easily got popped. If D'Angelo Russell was in the G League, he would have got popped, probably, in that instance. But everything is safe. No fines.
Good. Okay, let's take one more break. When we come back, JD has Tweet of the Night. Don't go anywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, before we start wrapping up today's podcast, let's end with some Tweet of the Night fun.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night. I was going to do a deep dive into pickleball in China, but luckily, Skeets came through with this tweet. Well, it's a series of tweets. Okay. The first one's from Clutch Sports, and it's of Nikola Jokic. Passing the ball through the arms of Brook Lopez there, and Skeets. So here it is again.
Clap it up.
All right, he just claps over his head, sort of like the Queen concert, you know, when they,
yeah.
when they do the thing.
Yeah.
Skeets with this tweet: "Sweet Kid Street defense." Okay, don't quite get it.
I had a lot of people confused.
then he had to follow it up with some explanations. That's a deep cut. Canadian reference, my friends. And then a shot of two kids in a car, like a toy car, on a game show. And then he has to further explain, because they always clapped like this with their hands over their heads. In those funny little cars. So Kids Street, a Canadian
kids show. It's like a game show. It's like the Newlywed Show for siblings,
yes.
Basically. Yeah. So how well do you know your brother or sister?
Do you remember the show, Kid Street?
No.
I mean, I'm definitely not asking Trey, because this was a Canadian show in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hosted by Kevin Frank. That's the only reason I know of it. Because, you know.
Everybody knows Kevin Frank.
Kevin Frank. Not Kevin Frankish. Not to be confused. Actually, I've met Kevin Frank. I've taken some improv class from him. Anyways, very deep cut, hilarious. I love it when you have to explain yourself in two separate.
As soon as I tweeted it, I was like, "Oh my god, nobody's going to know what the hell I'm talking about." Because I immediately, anytime I ever see anybody do that, I think of Kid Street, and the show, because they always sat in those cars, and anytime those kids clapped, they always, all of them would go. Like above their head.
Because they're instructed to, probably, by the producer, right?
Well, listen to this. I'm glad I tweeted this morning. Somebody responded. Someone who was on that show once told me that they were told to clap like that because there were mics where the steering wheels were. The more you know.
Wow.
So
okay,
they are
makes
being
sense.
Told by the producers, hey, don't clap in your funny little car. The mic's right there. It's going to be way too loud.
Too much.
And we want to see it. I think it looks funny, too.
Yeah.
So clap over your heads like you're Brooke Lopez playing defense.
Canadian game show, you can't spring for laughs back then.
No.
Well, you know what? Probably because they always had to keep getting in and out of the car as well. It's like you go to the soundproof booth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably why.
But, man,
what's
I
the
used
point
to
of clapping in a soundproof booth?
I used to love this show, though, because, I mean, obviously it's a kids' game show.
Yeah.
And, like, they had, like, a prize wall.
Oh, you get to pick, yeah.
Oh, man, you know, just like the best toys. Of
Super
the time.
NES up there.
Oh.
Yeah, like they had some good looking prizes.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Wheel of Fortune used to do that way, way back in the day.
Oh, really?
You'd accumulate your money, and then whatever money you had, you would go shopping, and you'd be like, okay, I'll take the Betamax for $500, please, Pat.
All right, Kid Street.
I don't think I've ever seen the name Melody spelled like that.
two L's.
So
M-A-E-L-L-O-D-Y.
Melody.
Wow.
Sister of Aline?
Yeah.
A-L-L-Y-N-E?
Yeah, that's nuts.
Those look like AI name tags.
And JD, I'm glad you brought up that it took two tweets for me to explain my initial tweet, because I just quickly typed in Kid Street, found the first photo, went with the girls, and then I'm like, well, that doesn't really explain much.
Right.
I mean, maybe if you watched Kid Street, now you get it. But then I was like, will there be a photo of kids clapping in these cars? Yep. I just added clap to my Google search, and there's Samir and his brother or whatever.
Yeah.
And
Fareed, Samir and Fareed.
Yeah, so there you go. I'm glad we got Kid Street in here. You want to do video and arcade top 10 with Nicholas Pickles?
Yeah, that's what I thought you would have gone with.
And I could talk Canadian game shows all day. Bumper Stumpers. I've talked about that one before. That's not
Bumper Stumpers.
That's not a kid's game. That's not a kid's game.
Who's Nicholas Pickles?
He was the host of video and arcade top 10. It was you played video games and competed against each other.
That's cool.
These are great games. Yeah. They're great shows. Nicholas Pickles.
Nicholas Pickles. That's a funny
That's incredible name.
That's up there with J.E. Skeets
That's
for
really,
stage name.
Yeah. It really is. That's better.
Everybody calls me Pickles.
There's already a Nick Smith. Okay, I guess I'll go with Pickles.
He should call Pickle Games.
He should.
Pickleball
Absolutely.
Games?
Pickleball games, for sure.
You said pickle games, which I assume is just a Canadian competition show from the 80s.
We had a game show.
Like American Gladiators. the pickle games, yeah.
We had a game show for kids where you just had to eat pickles.
Yeah. Roll the pickle. How many can you put in your sleeve? Pickle sleeve, great game.
I meant Nicholas Pickles should call Nicholas pickleball Pickles. Games.
He should, 100% should. I mean, that guy's probably retired by now. He's probably playing pickleball right now.
Probably is. All right, let's call it there. Oh, boy. We're a little loopy here after a late night down at the College Park Skyhawks game. Thanks for joining us here live on YouTube. Hit the like button. Make sure you subscribe. Just hit 96,000 subs. Getting close to 100K, so let's do that soon. And podcast listeners, help us out. Leave us a 5-star rating and review. We're back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern, here from the Classic Factory. Hopefully we'll see you then. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, kids are Canadian too.
Embrace the day, people.